Podcast Help Desk number 85 for April 29th, 2016.
The Podcast Help Desk is where we go deep into the technology of podcasting, help you with the problems you may run into, and when we have a chance, review new gadgets, services, and solutions for podcasters. To keep your podcast running smoothly, it takes some tech. That's what Podcast Help Desk is here for. To smooth out the geek speak and put it in, more or less, plain English. The main audience for this podcast is those who have podcasts and want to tweak the tech to get better sound, a better website, a more reliable feed, or a more streamlined workflow. Also, for podcasting beginners that don't want to make all the mistakes themselves. Here's your host, Mike Dell.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whatever the case may be. This is Mike. And welcome to the Podcast Help Desk. Today, had a great conversation with another podcast pioneer, this time Sean Thorpe from hypernonsense.com and sean.mx, and also one of my coworkers over at Blueberry in support. And we sat down over Skype and had a great discussion about podcast topics and, you know, how Sean got started and way back in January of 2005. So I'll play that here. So here's Sean Thorpe. Sean, thanks for coming on Podcast Help Desk.
Thanks so much for having me on, Mike. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. I feel like we've talked so many times on podcasts, but really, I don't think it's been that many, but whatever. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. I think, I was on one of your shows back when, we were doing the, November where you posted
post month, November. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what. And, I was looking for, podcast experts and pioneers and all that. And I've been kind of, doing that all along, and I realized I'd never actually had you on this show.
Well, I hope I can live up to such lofty aspirations, but I'm always happy to talk about podcasting. I love it. So,
yeah, it's kind of a passion here too. And you know, of course, we both work for Blueberry in tech support, and I think you've been there about a year and a little bit.
Yeah, it's about almost. Coming up to about 15 months, so a little over a year, and still learning. So much to learn, and I'm always learning more stuff, and which is the point. I think if you reach the point where you feel like you know everything about any given topic, you should probably back away from it, because I just can't imagine that you can really gain that level of mastery of anything, and certainly not of podcasting, at least in my case.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I still get tickets that baffle me and like, well, first off, why are they doing that? And second off, I don't know how to fix it yet, but I'll figure it out.
Yeah, well, and that is the challenge. There are so many different ways to do everything in relation to podcasting, and that just runs from just producing the media itself, recording the audio, video, whatever you want to do. And then there's another level beyond that with editing and post-production, and another level beyond that when you're talking about actually publishing and, distributing the content. Obviously, with Blueberry, we have our own set of tools and services for that, and that's primarily what we deal with. But sometimes things that are outside of, the usual Blueberry stuff comes into play because people are using that, and we want to support everyone where they are as best we can, and sometimes that causes us to have to research things or maybe ask some questions, whatever the case may be. And then as I think you were kind of alluding to earlier, Mike, sometimes people come to us and they have created themselves a bit of a, I don't want to say quagmire, but one of the things that has always made me curious about podcasters and the way that they do things is I just want to know, how did they come to the idea that this was the way to set everything up? And, they've got a, maybe they're using PowerPress with a WordPress site, and they've got all these other different plugins that are active and not really doing anything, or, you know, they got wrangled into using FeedBurner or whatever the case is. And sometimes, you know, we have to kind of work through all that stuff, but it's part of the challenge, and it's an ongoing process for sure.
Okay. Well, we'll get into how you started in podcasting, but this whole tech support thing is interesting. I had one not too long ago. You talk about quagmires. They had SoundCloud, and then they got FeedBurner, and then they fed FeedBurner into FeedBlitz.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And each one of those feeds, plus they also signed up for Blueberry hosting and were using the Blueberry feed, but they also had a WordPress site. And they had, you know, like one directory was pulling SoundCloud, the other one was pulling from FeedBlitz, one was pulling from FeedBurner. And I mean, it was just like, well, what? Where did that come from?
Yeah, some of the situations you see are really just baffling. And I, you know, I posted this on my personal Twitter account a couple weeks ago, and it's something I've been thinking a lot about, and that is, I don't know if we're still facing a problem in podcasting in general as far as bringing in new podcasters and making them understand, I don't want to say the basics, but having kind of that fundamental understanding, the concepts of how all this stuff works together. If we're falling short on that in some cases, or if the tools that are available just aren't, I don't want to say user-friendly or robust enough or whatever, so that people think that they need to pull in all these different things to try to make it work. Because for me, and I've been doing this since 2005, and it's always just been a matter of, I create a podcast website, I have my RSS feed there, and I have my media, and I'm done. I don't really think about I just all these other methods that people seem to get wrapped into. I don't understand where that comes from. And I don't know if it's because they're getting bad information, or they're sort of, you know, pulling parts off of different tutorials online and they're trying to make it all make sense, or how this happens. And when I look at podcasting in comparison to other, I don't know, digitally native media, thinking about things like online video or blogging, it feels to me like podcasting still has a lot more moving parts, and there's a lot more sort of friction areas. And some of that's because, you know, YouTube pretty much owns online video. Everybody just figures, if I'm going to put a video online, I put it on YouTube. There are other options, but a lot of people just sort of go that way and don't think about anything else. And there are all these different free services you can use to start a blog and still get a reasonable amount of traction. But podcasting has never really had that kind of singular solution. And I don't think that's entirely bad. But what happens is people sort of, you know, they do get wrangled into all these different ideas, and it can cause problems if they don't really understand the basics to begin with, which is, you need to have an RSS feed at the least, and your media online, and, you know, you should have hopefully some singular point of presence online. And once you kind of have those three things nailed down, you don't need to worry about adding in FeedBlitz and FeedBurner and all this other kind of stuff, provided the tools that you're using already give you everything you need. I do think, even though I don't recommend it and I don't really like when people use FeedBurner, there are a few cases where it's probably a good idea. But outside of that kind of stuff, it's just going to work so much better the simpler you can make it.
Yeah, and that's I kind of the challenge is, how do we make it simple, right, without compromising, you know, what we all want to do? You know, we want to keep our own brand. We want to, you know, we want to have control of our whole you know, media empire, so to speak. And, you know, there's so many ways you can do it. I mean, yeah, there's super, super easy ways to podcast. But in those super, super easy ways, you give up a lot. You know, you give up control of your domain name. You get, you know, give up control of you know, I don't know, I'm thinking of like Audio Boom. Audio Boom is completely simple. You know, you record into an app on your phone, you hit publish, and you're done. You know, you have to name it. That's it. But Audio Boom controls everything. And then you got the other extreme where you roll your own RSS feed, you know, in a text editor on your Linux machine, you know. And, yeah, you have total control, but it's a complete pain. So you got to kind of find that middle ground there where you get services to help you with those things that you really don't need to know. I mean, you don't need to know how to write an RSS feed from scratch. Oh. You know? And when you're talking about video, you know, YouTube makes it stupid simple. It, no matter what your video format is, you throw it into YouTube, they transcode it to where it works on their system, and you're done. We don't have anything like that in podcasting that is really worth doing. You know, maybe SoundCloud kind of tries to be that way, but then again, you know, they have all kinds of other problems.
Yeah, and thinking about a few things there, the first one, you know, I've spent now a little over a year, as we said earlier, looking at a lot of different RSS code, helping out, you know, PowerPress users. And I understand how RSS works at sort of the fundamental level, certainly a lot more than I did before, but I would not want to sit down, and I'm not sure that I could actually sit down and just hand code my own RSS feed. I do know it well enough now that I could take an existing feed, you know, copy all the tags, put in my own information, but I would not ever want to do that, and I wouldn't normally recommend it to people. I feel like, you know, Mike, it's funny, before you mentioned, creating your own RSS feed on a text editor in Linux, I kind of feel like, well, if somebody's already in Linux, then they're probably a little more advanced technically. They could probably handle that if they really wanted to. And I'm sure there are people who are doing it. But I think for most of us, we want the tool to do the work for us. And this kind of goes off what I was saying earlier, that while the podcasting tools we have are so much more robust and so much more refined and usable and better than certainly they were 10, 11 years ago, I still wonder at times if there's not more refinement that needs to happen so that people who want to publish a podcast can just go to it and not have to know as much about what's happening under the hood. And, you know, we're not there yet, but we're getting closer. And I don't know. One of the things to me that's so charming about podcasting is that it's, again, thinking of these digitally native mediums. So you kind of think of blogging, podcasting, online video. You know, there's other things, but those are kind of the big ones. And podcasting is still kind of holding on to the spirit of the original open web, because it's not so easy to just go into a silo and go, okay, all my content is, you know, all my podcast content is in the silo. And yeah, I sort of own it. I sort of control it, but I don't. And who cares? Because everyone understands what the silo is. That's kind of the YouTube thinking. And, you know, blogging is a little more dispersed just because there's so many different platforms and they sort of fill different needs for different people. But podcasting is still, I think, if you're going to do it, you will probably, or you can, achieve as much quote unquote success, for whatever that means, by doing it, you know, the old fashioned way, you know, rolling your own website, managing your own feed so much as you need to, you know, producing your audio, uploading it. And iTunes is an example, and there's certainly not the only thing to consider, but iTunes considers a valid RSS feed made by PowerPress and a valid RSS feed made by the person who's rolling it on, you know, their own Linux box or whatever, the same. So there's still an opportunity there to kind of come at it from a different approach, as opposed to, well, you know, I just throw everything into the silo and I don't worry about it anymore. And I, that's one of the things I still like about podcasting. There's still kind of that throwback to, you know, remember when we all used to hand code, you know, bad HTML back in the late 90s. Like, there's still kind of a little bit of a throwback to that.
Oh, yeah, and all the GIF images that flash and all that stuff. Yeah, yeah. That's
Link
and it's so, you know, it, you know, podcasting, you know, the basics of podcasting, as I always tell everybody, is, okay, podcasting is just blogging with media.
Yeah.
But
that's a good explanation. I like that.
Because, you know, blogging, you can blog. I mean, you can write your blog posts in a text editor and upload hand-coded HTML, and it's still a blog.
Yeah.
You know, it might not be a blog with an RSS feed, but yeah, it'll be a blog.
For
and,
sure.
And, you know, podcasting can be very similar, although, you know, people argue about the definition of podcasting, but I always say it's online media, you know, delivered by an RSS feed.
Yeah.
Or at least that delivered optionally by an RSS feed, because nowadays with, you know, the mobile phones and the apps and all that stuff, the RSS feed may not be part of, say, an individual show app. Most likely it is, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. And a lot of the apps now aren't reliant on you adding RSS feeds into them. You know, Stitcher's a good example. Like, I can't take a podcast that's not in Stitcher and add it to Stitcher. I can only subscribe to shows that are already on that platform. And
that's a good example of an app that doesn't use RSS directly.
Right.
You know, they populate their catalog with RSS, but they don't deliver things by RSS.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going off on a tangent here. I love it. But let's get to how you got into podcasting and you know, little backstory on what makes Sean tick.
Sure. Well, I guess the really long view story, which I'll try to make as brief as possible, is I've always been kind of fascinated with audio more so than video, but I do like video, but just media in general and media creation. You know, I'm of the age where as around the age of 10, I was, you know, recording things with my boombox. And I will say this, when I was, 12, 13, me and my idiot friend Ronnie, we would do, you know, our fake radio shows and skits on my boombox. And we would actually record them on cassette tapes and dub the tapes off and give them to our friends. And because of that, I kind of feel like we invented podcasting.
There you go.
But, you know, there, unfortunately, neither one of us had the foresight maybe to put a patent on it. So,
yeah, well, I'm editing Wikipedia as we speak.
Okay, good. So, you know, maybe it started there. And then I was fortunate enough in high school to get to attend a vocational center that was off campus. And, you know, that was a media production class I took where I really got kind of the introduction to using mixers and microphones. They didn't have a big audio portion, but they did have a pretty decent little video studio. So that was when I first kind of got the bug for editing. And, you know, we'd go out and we'd do these projects where we'd, record, video around the campus or whatever, and then we'd come back and edit it. And I really actually enjoyed that. And it was kind of my introduction to that. And then after that, I went to an actual broadcasting school and worked in radio, had my cup of coffee. Interestingly, I just kind of realized this, but I went into radio right at pretty much the time that it got deregulated.
Okay.
So it was like a few months later that I was in a small suburban FM station in the Chicago area. And what do you know? We got bought out by a nationally syndicated radio conglomerate that was not only going to let everyone go at the station, but they were going to change it from English to Spanish language, which wasn't necessarily a big deal. But then all the programming became automated. So they had like, you know, they just had robots running the studio, and they had like a station manager, a secretary, and a salesperson.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the end of my my time in radio.
I had a similar experience in television, but we'll go into that later.
Okay. And, you know, so after that, I just kind of did stuff on my own. Interestingly, coincidentally, maybe that year that I was in radio was also the year that I got online. I got a decent computer, a Pentium 75, and got a home internet line, and then began spending all night long every night online, just researching things and learning things, and started publishing my own little web pages and stuff. And then we'll fast forward quite a bit here. In mid 2004, in the summer, I wanted to kind of step some of my web publishing up, and I actually bought my first actual domain name and bought what's the word I want to use here? Web hosting. They didn't quite call it shared hosting like they do now, but that's pretty much what it was. Because that stuff, you know, around the mid-2000s is when that stuff was really starting to become accessible, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. It was prohibitively expensive in the 90s.
I remember in the 90s, they used to call them virtual servers. And, you know, it was you would cost like $100 a year for a domain name. And, you know, to have a virtual server, it was like $40 or $50 a month. And I just went, no, there's no way I can afford that.
Well, I remember in the dial-up days, all the ISPs would give you a little bit of web space.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you'd have like users.whateverisp.com, squiggly mark, and your username as your web page. And we used to have a lot of fun with those, but of course they didn't get traffic.
Well, interestingly, one of mine did, only because I had some photos of the city of Chicago up on the internet in 97. I had bought a flatbed scanner, and I went out and took some 35mm photos, and I put them on my little, you know, user dot whatever squiggly line web page.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd added it to the Yahoo directory. This was back when most of Yahoo was still being
it was curated.
Indexed, yeah, curated by people. And if you had a page that you found, or if you had a page, you could submit it into their directory and they would just add it. And after that got in there, you know, everybody back then, Yahoo was the thing, of course. So when people would search for Chicago or Chicago photos, a lot of people landed on my gallery, and I got emails from all over the world of people. Then they were requesting things, you know, people that used to live in Chicago. They were like, hey, can you go over to this neighborhood and take pictures and all that kind of stuff? So it was fun, but it was kind of my first introduction to, oh, hey, this internet thing is a thing. You know, you can put stuff up here and people are going to find it and they're going to react to it and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, in 2004, I got the domain, set up my first quote unquote real website, I guess. And I remember having this kind of thought in the back of my head of, you know, what I want to do is I'm going to record my own radio show and just put it up as an MP3 file and see if anyone finds it. And it was maybe a couple months later that I actually learned about podcasting, because I was in, speaking of Yahoo, I was in a Yahoo group that was devoted to a local radio show from Chicago. And there was a guy on there that mentioned, you know, hey, there's this new, it was late 2004. He's like, hey, there's this new thing called podcasting and Adam Curry's into it. And I started researching it, and I was looking at all the different parts, and I went, okay, well, I was a musician, so I had plenty of microphones and some recording gear laying around. And I'm like, okay, well, creating the media is not going to be an issue. You need to have some kind of a web presence and an RSS feed. And I kind of knew what RSS was, but I didn't really understand how to make it. I had rolled my own movable type installation, and I knew that had RSS in it. So I figured I must be close to having all the parts. And in January of 2005, I was on one of the early podcast forums. It was probably Podcast Alley. And I was just kind of reading and going through posts and stuff. And someone had mentioned Feedburner. I went, oh, FeedBurner, maybe that's what I need. And I looked at it and I realized, okay, well, FeedBurner can add all this podcast stuff to my RSS feed I don't understand how to do. And in late January, I did my first podcast. It was called The Phantom Feed because of the name of the domain I was using. It's pretty much been one form of podcasting since or another since then. My wife eventually joined me on that, and we did that only for a few months because in April of 2005, we decided, we'll just move to California. And that kind of put the podcasting thing on the back burner. But we started up again in 2006 doing a podcast called Hyper Nonsense, which has had a bit of a spotty history, but is back and has been running now again for almost 2 years. And in between then, did a lot of podcasty type things and have done some audio editing for other people and have always kept – one foot in wherever I could find the podcast community online, whether that was email lists or forums or Facebook groups, and have always tried to just learn what I can and really share my knowledge. Because I guess if I had to pin myself down with a quote unquote mission, I guess it would be, I just don't like to see people give up because they're having an issue with technology or they just don't understand it. So anytime I saw somebody who was having something I thought that I could help them with, I would always try to, get them on the right path. And then, in early 2014, I started writing for Todd Cochran's Podcaster News site, and I'm still a contributor there. And then about a year later, so that would have been 2015 is when I joined the Blueberry team and helping people out there. So I guess that's really the condensed version.
Yeah, no, that's great. So I just realized you actually started podcasting before I did. Mm-hmm. I thought I was one of the first, but
I remember I think it was Rob Walsh who said that you can consider yourself an OG podcaster if you were doing it before iTunes was on the scene. So
I beat them. I think I was in April of 2005.
Okay.
And I cannot find my first podcast. I wish I could find that episode, but I cannot. So anybody out there that knows where Benzoid Report number one is, send it to me. But
I kept decent archives of mine, though I'm sure some of those files are probably now on like CDRs. So who knows if they've survived, but I may have them somewhere. Most of them, I would say at this point prior to 2014, are not actively online. They may be out there, but they're not on a site I'm maintaining right now.
Yeah, I think if you go to my MikeDell.com site, you can find stuff from probably 2006 on there.
Okay.
But from 2005, I don't think I have anything, but that's cool. Yeah, so January of 2005, I think what Todd started in 2004 sometime.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we're a bunch of old timers in podcasting. So
yeah, for sure. I'm in the 11 plus year club at this point. And, there have definitely been some breaks in there where I can't claim like what Todd can claim, where he's been pretty much doing at least one or two shows a week for most of that duration. I have some really long hiatuses in there, but I've always stayed, if I wasn't producing, I've always stayed active, just trying to be in the conversation and seeing what people are up to. And of course, I never stopped listening to podcasts. So
yeah, I started listening to podcast. Well, it wasn't actually podcast. It was, do you remember Bruce Williams on the radio?
No, I don't.
The old NBC TalkNet. This was Sally Jesse Raphael and Bruce Williams were okay. The two hosts on NBC TalkNet. It was back when NBC owned their radio network still. I think okay. That got taken over several times since then, but
yeah.
But, I used to download Bruce Williams' show from the NBC website. And this was, I want to say in 04 sometime, you know, so the iPod had come out, and I actually had one. I had one of those little iPod, whatever the little dinky shuffle one was. And I would download that, and you had to manually add the files to the player. And
right.
I was working the overnight shift at a print shop. And so that's what I would listen to all night. It was Bruce Williams, and there was, I don't know, two or three other radio shows that they would put out as MP3s. And then I heard this thing called podcasting from Leo Laporte on Tech TV back in 04. And this was before he got into it. And, you know, so I've been listening since then, but, it didn't start until April. And, like I said, everybody that listens to this show has heard the story, so I won't bore them with it, but it was a lot of fun. And, you know, I tried a bunch of different free hosting stuff, you know.
Oh yeah.
And that's why, you know, as podcast professionals, you know, I don't know, I'm an advanced hobbyist, I call it, but
yeah.
You know, that's why we always cringe when we see something new come out that's free. Hosting.
It's so true. And, you know, I really feel for people that need to do podcasting on a budget. And, you know, I don't like it when, under any circumstance, I don't care what it is, like if it's on a forum and somebody's honestly looking for help. And all the responses, or like the first couple responses, are just someone coming in telling them why they're doing everything wrong. I mean, sometimes that can be helpful, but I think when people are new and maybe they're enthusiastic, especially if they don't have a lot of money, you know, I would rather try and point them towards tools or resources I know that I feel are somewhat reliable, as opposed to just saying, you're doing it all wrong. You need to spend money. You need to do all this. Cause I mean, I understand that. But on the other hand, you're always going to be at the mercy of those free services. Cause that's always the trade-off, right? When a service gives you something for free, you have no recourse. You have really no recourse in whatever they decide to do with your content, essentially, but also, they don't have any real reason to serve you as a customer, because you know the free service is what they're giving you, and you just kind of have to take it.
Yeah,
so,
and free is a lousy business model.
Yeah, it is. It really has only worked for, you know, social media sites or, you know, services like that, where and of course we all know nothing's free. They're making money off of your eyeballs being on their site one way or another, or they're, you know, using your information for marketing or what have you.
Yeah, if you're getting something for free, you're the product.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the way it is. But, you know, like, you know, we all know of all these ones that have gone away, you know, Mevio, Podshow, I can't remember. There was one with Pod in the name Podango.
Podango,
I think.
Oh, there's been so many. I used a service back in 06 into 07 called ClickCaster.
Okay.
They were like the first, you know, media host, I guess you could say, that I used. I have to admit that for off and on at different times, I did use, you know, my self-hosted websites to serve my media. And I don't recommend that to people, but I have done it. And there's just so many of those services that have come and gone, where they were trying to build a business model off of giving you free hosting. And it just doesn't seem like it really works. I think the only ones that have seemed to manage to continue for a relatively long period of time, and it's not quite what we're talking about here, but it's close, would be something like either Blog Talk Radio or TalkShoe, but they have some business models in place. I don't know that they have any subscription services where they're actually making, you know, money, revenue from the user base, but they have things they're doing to generate revenue.
Yeah, and I believe Blog Talk Radio does have some sort of paid tiers in there too, but I'm not sure. And I know TalkShoe, I think, are they still around? I haven't been there in a while, yeah, but
I don't hear about them a lot, but I know there's someone on, you know, in some of the podcasting groups online who works with them, and every now and then he chimes in. So I feel like I've seen him within the last month or so. So apparently TalkShoe is out there. Now, this is something interesting that I've never actually heard confirmation of. So take this for what it's worth. But I had heard years ago that TalkShoe and Blog Talk Radio, at least a big part of how they earn their money is through the interconnect fees through the phone service. And to explain that real briefly, when like, okay, if I'm on AT&T and I call a Verizon number, AT&T has to pay an interconnect fee to connect that call to Verizon. I mean, I don't pay that directly. It's all rolled into what I pay. Well, it's always been my understanding from what I heard years ago that these two companies, TalkShoe, Blog Talk Radio, where they have these call-in services where you can just do your entire podcast over a telephone. Again, another thing I wouldn't recommend, but people do it. And what they've done is they've taken, you know, blocks of numbers and they own those numbers and they effectively become their own phone carrier. So every time someone calls into BTR or TalkShoe, either to contribute to a call that's ongoing or originate a call that will become a podcast, then those two services actually get interconnect fees on those inbound calls, which if you think about it is kind of a brilliant business model if you can scale it to the point where you can make money. And I've never heard this from verified sources, but it's always been my understanding that that's at least part of their business model. So at the least we can say if that's true, they are doing something to actually make money and in turn hopefully can support being your free podcast host.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and it's not like a direct host where you can upload a file and link it to your WordPress or mm-hmm. anything like that. But it's an interesting service. They are an interesting services. I've used TalkShoe in the past. I used to do a ham radio podcast and we mm-hmm. used to do a call in, you know, once a month or something on TalkShoe, and that worked out pretty good. The, you know, the audio quality is lousy, but sure. It's a, you know, it's a telephone, you know, yeah. And you know, not that, you know, these smartphones nowadays, you can, you know, get pretty decent audio from the mics on those. But, you know, this was back, you know, the old, you know, 40-pound handset that you got from the phone company that you had to rent, yeah. You know, and, you know, those things just don't sound all that good, but that worked. So, yeah. You know, there's nothing wrong with starting out that way. And that's what I always tell people starting out in podcasting, start out however you can, you know, get your content together.
Right.
And, you know, and you can always improve it later. You know, you get locked into some of these services, though. Make sure you have backups of everything. But, you know, in case they go poof one day.
Right.
What was it? One of those services, I want to say Poddango. I keep saying Poddango, but I don't know if that was the one. But they announced that they were shutting down on January 1st, the week before Christmas.
Yeah, it was in between Christmas and New Year's. They said, oh, next week we're going to shut down. So this is how long you have to pull all your recordings down if you want to keep them. And that's it. They were gone.
Yeah. And I was working at, that's when I first had started at Blueberry part-time. Yeah. And we had a real busy week between Christmas and New Year's moving people over.
I bet. Yeah.
And, but it worked out good in the end. And, you know, most people I think got their stuff, but that's the risk you run. You know, if you get on a free service, the risk you have is they may go poof one day. So make sure you have a backup plan.
That's always what I hope people are considering. And at the very least, everyone, please have local copies of your files. Yeah. Even if you're using a service like TalkShoe where you're calling in and they're generating everything for you, they're saving the call, they're publishing it, subscribe to your own feed. Have local copies of those files, because then if they disappear and you want to retain those for your own archive, you still have them.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, some of the some of the things that, you know, people run into. But then, you know, you build a big audience. So, you know, I look at these YouTubers that are, you know, real popular. What happens if Google pulls the plug on YouTube someday? You know, it's highly unlikely, but, you know, what happens? You know, poof, your stuff is gone.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, it's getting harder and harder, unfortunately, to kind of build your own, I don't want to say platform, but, you know, build off your own .com and retain an audience. People want to interact with you or your content where they are already. They don't want to have to go to another thing. And this is where it's kind of sad that kind of RSS as a concept, I'm not trying to say that RSS itself is bad or people don't use it. Obviously, it gets used. But in the original, you know, concept of RSS is, okay, a website can have this thing that you subscribe to so you don't have to always go back to that website to check for updates. And it's a shame that there wasn't a turning point where everything just became RSS, and then RSS was everywhere and people just understood it. So now we're getting back into this thing where we're talking about silos. YouTube is a good example. I remember when I first really found YouTube, I was working overnights at a call center, and thankfully they didn't have a very deep firewall. And I was working for about maybe five, 6 hours a night by myself because the call volume was pretty low. And, you know, I would just go online. And I don't know, somehow I got over to YouTube, and this was in 2007. So it was when, you know, YouTube wasn't brand new, but it was still mostly new. And it had a pretty active community of people that were vlogging on there. And I thought, wow, you know, I've been into podcasting now for a couple of years. There's this whole other thing that's happening that's very kind of podcast-like. It's not quite the same. And I thought, wow, I've really found, you know, my people. And I would, you know, but everything that happened in YouTube. You would log into your account, you'd subscribe. YouTube would tell you inside of YouTube, you know, when there were new videos out and that kind of stuff. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, what I'd really like to do is maybe get this, you know when these things update outside of YouTube so I don't have to just come back to YouTube. And I never saw any of the conversations on YouTube or around YouTube like what we always had in podcasting, which was, okay, I need to have my own website, my own RSS feed. There were YouTubers back then that would maybe put up their own site and, you know, blog on there, embed their videos or whatever. And I kind of realized that, you know, YouTube was so different because, unlike podcasting, it didn't have all these moving parts, which sort of goes back to the earlier conversation. And I kind of realized, in a way, these people, while what they were doing is kind of adjacent to what I was doing, it's not quite the same, or their mentality isn't the same, because they didn't have to go through that whole process of sort of figuring out how to distribute. They just upload the video to YouTube. And, you know, that's not bad. But as you said, what happens if whatever platform is YouTube? I don't know. It seems unlikely to me that YouTube's going to go away anytime soon. But don't even just think about it from those perspectives. Just think about it from the perspective of, this site, this silo has my content, the stuff that I created, and the trade-off is they give me unlimited everything, bandwidth, what have you, hosting space for my videos. But then I'm bound to, you know, their terms, and that could mean any number of things. And maybe one day they just go, you know what? We've decided that in order to subsidize the way that we give everybody all this free services, everybody gets ads on their videos. Doesn't matter if you're in a partner program. Doesn't matter if you as a creator make any revenue. And we're going to put the ads anywhere. We'll do anything we want. So, you know, you've got a 10-minute video at the 6-minute mark, an ad just gets dropped in, or maybe it's an overlay ad and you can't click off it. You can't get away from it. I mean, those kind of things can happen. And
And I think they do somewhat on YouTube now. And, you know, what is it? Was it Ustream got to the point, unless you were paying them, it was unwatchable.
Yeah.
And that was why, because you'd be going along and, you know, somebody would, like, I remember watching Todd, you know, when he was doing his thing on there on Ustream, and he would, you know, bring up a graphic and say, well, check out this. And then all of a sudden there'd be this pop-up over top of this graphic. And yeah. if you clicked a little X, it stopped the video and took you to that website for that advertiser. There was no, you know, it just totally ruined the experience. And, you know, that's one thing that's not happening with podcasting, and I'm very happy about that.
Right.
You know, some in podcasting may want that.
Sure.
You know, I can think of one particular podcasting company that would be doing that if it was technically possible.
Yeah, I can think of one podcasting company like that too, Mike. And the beauty of it is, though, okay, you can still, like, any of the, you know, the good, the reputable podcast hosting companies, we all know who those are. Blueberry's one, Libsyn's one. For the most part, I'm down with Spreaker. Those are our three examples. We know, or we feel confident with those companies, that if we give them our media and that's a distribution point and our audience is consuming through them, that the media we create and upload is what they're going to get. And part of the reason we know that's going to stay true is we're paying for those services. They have a revenue base that has a direct correlation to them providing us a service, as opposed to, you know, they're giving me something for free and I just have to deal with whatever they want to do to, you know, my stuff. So.
Well, it's, you know, there's like we said at the beginning, there's so many ways to skin the cat, you know, there's so many ways to podcast, and they're not, you know, not all of them are wrong. There might be a few, but for the most part,
might be a few,
you know, but for the most part, you can get away with it. And, you know, you were talking about putting it on your shared hosting account. I've done that, sure. You know, and most of the podcasts that I've done that with were pretty low volume podcasts.
Yeah.
You know, well, I wouldn't dare try that. You know, I wouldn't dare try that with a popular podcast, but.
No. Hey. And I think that's an okay place to start. Just understand that you need to have that sort of second, that backup plan in mind, so that if you get that, you know, nice a love letter one day from your hosting provider that says, okay, we see what you're doing here and you really can't do this anymore. These are the reasons why. Hopefully, if they're nice, they'll give you a week or two to move your stuff. If they're not, they'll just turn it off. But just have that backup plan in mind so that you know, okay, I'm doing this now. It's working for me. Okay. But if that isn't going to work, then what are my options beyond that? And while this is probably something that anyone who listens to Podcast Help Desk has heard enough, I'll say it one more time so you can at least hear it not out of Mike's mouth. But if you already own and control your own podcast RSS feed, making that switch over with your media provider is a lot easier.
If they're nice, they won't send you a $35,000 bill. That happened to somebody. They got real popular when they first started their podcast, and it went, you know, just took off. And they were doing that, and their provider, you know, said, well, hey, this is great. We're making lots of money from all this extra bandwidth we're selling. And they sent him a $35,000 bill at the end of the month. And it was like, oh my gosh. So, you know, be mindful about that. You know, it's against the terms of most web hosting companies' rules to podcast from their server.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know of one. I feel like I know of some that have sort of come out with a neutral stance, but I don't know of any that specifically say you can host your podcast media file on your shared hosting account. I think we could almost say Squarespace does that, but to me, Squarespace I wouldn't exactly call it a silo like YouTube, because you're probably going to have your own domain non-Squarespace. And then in theory, if you want to get off of Squarespace, you could do all the stuff to sort of keep everything, you know, contiguous between one host or another. But, and I don't really know what Squarespace, I mean, clearly we know that people host media on Squarespace and don't seem to have an issue with it. And I guess as ubiquitous as Squarespace is in podcasting in general, because of all the ads, they have to expect a certain amount of people are going to want to go there to start a podcast. But outside of that, I don't know of any shared hosting company that specifically says, oh, you can just host whatever you want and we'll be fine with it. So
yeah, even GoDaddy had a specific product that allowed podcasting, and they shut that down, I want to say a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Because I know I helped move a few people off of that. Mm-hmm. And we're still using it. I don't think it was a very popular product, but they did have an all-inclusive web and podcast hosting, but I think that's long gone.
Yeah.
Well, Sean, I guess we've been blabbing on here for darn near an hour.
Okay.
We probably ought to cut this off so I can get this in the feed and give somebody an actual episode. I've been kind of slacking off the last couple weeks.
Well, it happens.
Yeah, I've been busy with other life events. Sure. So that's how it works. But where can people find you, your podcast, and then whatever other activity you might be into?
Sure. Well, the podcast I produce, I guess, most regularly is the one I do with my wife. And you can find that at hypernonsense.com. It's very much a throwback show, I guess you might say. We like to call it Podcasting 1.0. So if you remember what it was like back in those early days and you're kind of yearning for that, we're kind of like that. It's not a super highly produced show, though I think the audio quality is pretty good. And it's a lot of stuff, just kind of us talking about our lives and that kind of thing. You might almost hasten to call it an audio blog style format. And then you can also find me at my personal website, that's Sean.mx, Sean.mx. And I have a blog there that, as so many blogs are, is really neglected. And obviously, you can find me around the Blueberry stuff, the Blueberry support forums. And if you file a support ticket with Blueberry, I may be one who responds to it. And I just want to throw out there that I do, you know, as a freelancer, I do provide a lot of different, you know, podcasty type services, audio editing. I do freelance writing and podcast consulting. So if you're looking for any of those, feel free to reach out to me. I feel like my rates are pretty fair, and I like to work with people. So I'm pretty open-minded up to a point. And you can find me on Twitter at Shawno, Shawno. And I think that's good enough for now. If you go to my website, I have everything. Everywhere I am is linked on there, so you can find me wherever you like.
All right. Well, very good. Well, thanks for coming on the show. And it's good to have just a conversation with somebody. I've done this a few other times with other people, and this was great. Lots of tidbits in there.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Mike. Thanks for having me on. I had a lot of fun.
All right. We'll talk to you offline.
Okay.
Hello. This is your computer. This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. I enjoy blueberries. Please find more at blueberry.com. Blueberry. No E's, please.
And speaking a little bit more about Blueberry, if you notice over at podcasthelpdesk.com, I have a few extra subscribe buttons. I actually have one missing too, but that's a whole nother story. But I'm running the beta, the pre-beta, I guess you would call it, because we haven't released it out to the beta users yet. But I've got it running on podcasthelpdesk.com and got a couple of new features. The subscribe on Google Play button is there in the widget on the sidebar. And also Google Play subscribe links under the player. And, of course, the new player, which is now part of PowerPress 7 for those who are Blueberry hosting customers. So that's all wired in there. Of course, Angela's got to make a few more tweaks before we let it out to the beta users, and then it'll be generally released. And well, I won't say when because I don't know when, but when it's ready. So go over and check that out. And there's also a Stitcher link. Subscribe on Stitcher. And, you know, that's something that the users have asked for. And so we are going to deliver that. And with that, we're going to call this a podcast. It's pushing an hour here. So that's good. Good conversation with Sean there. I really do enjoy talking to him. And we're going to be starting something new here in the next month or two. I'll be sure to let you all know about that, but I think we're going to do a help desk related call-in show, kind of, you know, in the same vein that Dave Jackson does Ask the Podcast Coach, except for this one's going to be officially part of Blueberry, I think. Not sure, but if, as I get more information about that, I will let you know. Said, oh yeah, and if you want to, of course, help out the show, there's all kinds of links in the sidebar over at podcasthelpdesk.com. Of course, you can always get a free month of service at blueberry.com, hosting or stats or whatever else we come out with. Go over there, click the banner, or just use the promo code helpdesk at checkout, and that helps me out and helps Blueberry out, and just it's a good deal for everybody involved. Of course, if you're going to buy something at Amazon, click the Amazon banner on podcasthelpdesk.com and then go shop as normal. And that way I get a cut of that to help me out here to keep this show going, because you know, I don't get paid for this show. So be it. So with that, everybody have a great week. Next week, I will have, if everything goes right, comedian Mark Whitney from markwhitney.com. And late night last week, that was the interview I was promoting a couple weeks ago, and our schedules still haven't quite lined up, but he assures me next week we'll get her done, and so hopefully we'll have that. And if you haven't listened to Mark, he's quite the character. And you can find his stuff over at latenightlastweek.com. Spell it however you can. Actually, if you search for Mark Whitney, you probably have better luck. And he's been podcasting various shows over the last year or so. And I think he's found his groove on Late Night Last Week. Very good show. And of course, if you find that you like him there, go look at the website there and watch his one man show, or listen to it, called A Fool for a Client. And that's kind of a fun thing. So anyway, catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Podcast Help Desk. If you would like Mike to answer your question on the show, email podcasthelpdesk@gmail.com, or better yet, record a voice message at podcasthelpdesk.com. See you next time.